This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. 16 million Americans are living with diabetes. In this portion of the program, we talk about the disease and about conquering the dietary obstacles of the disease. Listeners, I welcome your questions for Robin Webb. She is one of the authors of a new cookbook from the American Diabetes Association, The Diabetes Food and Nutrition Bible, a complete guide to planning, shopping, cooking, and eating. Her co-author is Hope Warshaw. We'll also talk this afternoon about maintaining a healthy weight, reducing the risk of certain cancers, and adding more healthful elements to our diets. This is a program that we hope will be useful to all our listeners. Questions and comments are encouraged this afternoon. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Robin Webb is a nutritionist, cookbook author, and cooking instructor. She is well known for her cookbooks featuring cooking techniques and recipes for people with diabetes. In addition to the Diabetes Food and Nutrition Bible, Robin Webb is the author of Flavorful Seasons Cookbook and Diabetic Meals in 30 Minutes or Less. All are published by the American Diabetes Association. Listeners, again, those telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Robin, good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you for joining us
this
afternoon. Let's begin with some really basic questions.
Okay.
The first one has got to be, what is diabetes?
Okay. Sure. It's the body's inability to produce enough insulin. Either there is no insulin or it is impaired in order to keep the blood sugar levels nice and even. Diabetes basically is broken down into two different domains. What is formerly known as juvenile diabetes, or we call type 1 diabetes, strikes about 10-12% of the population. Typically, you do see it in younger people. They have an inability to produce any insulin, and immediately we go on insulin to keep alive.
Mm-hmm.
About 90% of the population has type 2 diabetes, also known as adult onset diabetes. This knows really no age barrier anymore. We're seeing it in younger and younger people. This is the body's inability to actually use insulin correctly. A person that has type 2 diabetes may not ever have to go on insulin or may have to go on insulin. There are particular ethnic groups, particular profiles, but it really doesn't know many boundaries. So diabetes is at an all-time epidemic high.
Yeah. What is gestational diabetes?
Gestational, the third, which I should have mentioned. Gestational diabetes shows up in women who are pregnant. Unfortunately, with gestational diabetes, it can be a precursor to having diabetes. This is why it's so important if you're a woman and you've had gestational diabetes, just to make sure that you're checked each year for diabetes. Usually once your baby is born, the gestational diabetes does, quote-unquote, disappear, but you may be a more likely candidate to develop diabetes later in life.
Okay.
So just be careful.
And what is insulin?
Insulin is a hormone that the pancreas makes. What it does, it allows the blood sugar to remain nice and stable so that there's not too much sugar into the bloodstream. What happens is if your cells do not get enough sugar, it ends up in the bloodstream. So this is dangerous for several reasons. There, I can go on and on. We can just probably do a show about this alone. But the main reason why high blood sugar is so detrimental, it can cause over time kidney problems, vision problems. You have certainly heard of people who have diabetes who have amputated arms, legs. It really does affect so many things. People aren't aware that diabetes really does affect so much the heart. People who have diabetes are more susceptible to stroke. People don't die of diabetes. They die of the complications of diabetes. So it's so important to really understand this disease. And thankfully, more and more research has been done and is continuing to be done.
Yeah. Researching, is research going on, ongoing for a cure? There is no cure.
There is no cure currently. That's correct. Yes, the research definitely is focusing in on a cure. But what's very promising is that even in just the last 7-8 years, we really know so much more about the disease. It used to be called like the sugar disease, and we used to hear that if you ate sugar, you'd develop diabetes, or if you have diabetes, you should not have a scrap of sugar. That's just one instance. And now we just know so much more about diet and exercise and medications than ever before. So even if we don't find a cure, which I hope we do, but even if we don't find a cure, good education goes a very long way.
Mm. I was surprised the other day to come across a table for gauging your risk for developing diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I suspect that a lot of us are at risk.
A lot of us are at risk, and we don't. It's kind of a silent disease. And yes, there are indications whether or not you have diabetes. There are some symptoms, excessive loss weight, losing weight, perhaps excessive thirst, excessive urination. There are some signs, but then there are people who have diabetes and there are no signs at all. People say, well, I don't have it in my family. That doesn't guarantee it either. You may be the first in your family. So it's very, very important that you really take care of yourself. And when you go to the doctor and have your physical, you know, make sure that they check your blood sugar. It's very important. Even if you don't have it in the family, you don't have any symptoms.
Mm. Obesity and a lack of exercise, family history, age, these are all factors.
Absolutely. And yes, you're right. I mean, a good percentage of the population does not exercise, does not eat right, perhaps has a relative that has had diabetes. So a lot of people, yes, are at risk.
Yeah. Why is weight so important in the prevention and management of diabetes?
Well, it keeps the blood sugar under control. You know, the more fit that you are, the better in shape that you are, the more proper weight that you are, you're able to keep your blood sugar in control. So that's why, number one reason why it's important. Also, you know, to prevent heart attacks, certainly. Heart and diabetes are very much related to each other. So it's all around good news just to keep your weight under control.
Given that so many people are at risk of becoming diabetic, will people without the disease find your books helpful in terms of preventing the disease?
Sure, absolutely. There's, you know, nobody has any crystal guarantee here, but certainly if you keep your weight under control, you get regular physical checkups, you eat a good, varied, wholesome diet, you can go a long way to preventing it. And even if you become diagnosed with diabetes, at least the problem won't be as exacerbated. You will know what to do to take care of it and to keep it under control the best you can. So, yes, the book is a wonderful way to treat, you know, to prevent really any what we call dietary degenerative diseases, you know, such as heart disease. There's a big link with heart disease, cancer, big link with diet and cancer. So the book is very, yes, its target audience is for people with diabetes or people who care for people with diabetes, but I think anybody that picks it up would really get great tips in order to how to prevent a heart attack, order how, you know, to keep their weight under control, perhaps even prevent cancer.
Yeah. The recipes in the book, it seems to me, would be family pleasing as well. I mean, you could cook,
exactly,
if you've got a member of the family with diabetes and you need to put food on the table for everybody. You could use the recipes from this book, and everyone would be happy.
Exactly. And that's, whenever I write books, this is actually my sixth book with the American Diabetes Association, I always think in terms of, you know what, there's probably someone else who's involved here that may not have diabetes. And unless you really love to cook, I don't believe in running a restaurant, you know, making everybody have different food just to suit their dietary needs. The recipes are really designed with the entire family in mind, and everyone should really be eating healthy anyway. So the book is a really great way to just use, you know, one recipe for the entire family.
When did you become interested in dietary issues surrounding diabetes?
Oh, a bajillion years ago. well, I just celebrated my 40th birthday, so I guess probably when I was six. My father had passed away of a massive heart attack when I was six. My mother developed diabetes when she was 39. Subsequently, I did find out that both of her parents had diabetes, and then my aunt, my mother's sister, had diabetes. And then on my father's side, my great aunt and my cousin have diabetes. So I'm kind of surrounded by all of it, and heart disease as well. And I grew up in the hotel and restaurant business. My parents were executives at a big resort hotel in upstate New York. So my love of food And cooking was combined with wanting to make sure that, you know, people in my family would stay healthy. So I had an interest very, very early on in cooking. I started making family meals when I was 12, and to make sure that my mom was well taken care of. And it just kind of blossomed from there. And I've been in the food business ever since 12 years old. And I wasn't making, you know, easy bake oven cookies back then. I really was cooking. So that's really where my interest is really combining the two together, because it seems like almost an oxymoron to say, you know, great tasting, fabulous food and, you know, preventing heart disease or preventing diabetes or preventing cancer. You know, those two don't really usually go together, but I wanted to really show that you can eat well and eat delicious, wonderful food and keep yourself healthy, and it can be done, and that's what the book shows.
Yeah. So often we hear about the difficulty of maintaining a healthy weight after weight loss. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for folks to help maintain their weight after losing excess weight?
Well, I think the main thing, and actually Hope, who is my wonderful co-author in the book, delves a little bit more into the psyche in the book, which is great. She makes a wonderful contribution in that way. But one of the things we both feel is, you know, people still have to maintain their health goals. You have to have very specific goals. It's kind of like if you were at your job and you kind of got bored with your job and you started goofing around at your job. It's probably because you don't have goals anymore. So you want to make sure that you always have some sort of health goal going. People in their exercise program, if you lose all your weight and you stop exercising, or you just sort of do it haphazardly, of course the weight's going to come back. And then really what the book does illustrate, once again, is that the food really needs to taste good. I mean, you can only put up with bland, boring food for so long. I know many people say, you know, I just want to lose 20 pounds. I'll eat, you know, boneless, skinless chicken breasts and some carrots, and I can do that for 3 months. They probably could do that for 3 months. And then, you know what, it does get boring. And then you want cheeseburgers and fries, and you want all of those things. So why start there in the first place? So we really show people how to put together wonderfully tasty menus, and how to do it for a lifetime so that they're not doing the yo-yo dieting. And that really puts a lot of stress on your blood sugar levels, your heart. I mean, it's just not the way to do it. And the book really goes into how to organize yourself so that the food is great and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Fats and sugars are high in calories. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for folks who want to cut down on those things, mm-hmm. but who want to prepare and enjoy stuff that tastes good?
Right. Well, I think that's the thing that you have to look at. What are your specific goals? Do you need to lose 10 pounds? Do you need to lose 50 pounds? You know, where are you? Is your blood sugar running very high and consistently high? Or are they running, you know, pretty darn good? You have to look at where you are first. And then you have to decide, well, where are my allowances? You know, if you work with a registered dietitian, which Hope and I strongly suggest that you do once you become diagnosed with diabetes, is to sit down with a professional and say, you know what, the truth is I love chocolate chip cookies. How can we work chocolate chip cookies into my food program so that I'm happy but I'm meeting my goals? And you know what, a dietitian, a well-trained dietitian, will be able to figure that out. It doesn't mean cutting out the chocolate chip cookies. It doesn't mean giving up sugar, even if you have diabetes. It means how do you work it all in so that it works for you. Doesn't mean you can go hog wild. It doesn't mean you can do whatever you want all of the time. But there are ways to work it in. And again, we suggest sitting down with a professional and working it through. And if you don't have the time to do that, you know, our book is a good start. We show you how you can put in sugars, you know, even a little bit of alcohol. Not that Hope and I, you know, would say go with that first. We are certainly, as most nutritionists, interested in you consuming fruits and vegetables and whole grain foods and lean protein and all the good stuff for you first. But we never said anywhere in the book that you couldn't have a cookie or a piece of pie. We've never said that. Mm-hmm. And it just needs to be worked in such a way that it works for you.
There's a recipe for pesto in the book. Actually, there are a number of pestos
mm-hmm.
in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm pointing this one out is that you still use a little oil, but mm-hmm. What you do is you use fat-free chicken broth,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of that in
mm-hmm.
there. That's a great idea because mm-hmm. then you're getting some of that mouthfeel of the of the oil,
mm-hmm.
but you're also cutting way back on a dish that is, you know, I mean, I think some recipes for pesto call for a cup or more of oil.
You're right. Exactly. And one of the things that people will discover in the book, unlike a lot of other quote-unquote diet books, our book is real food. It's not very next to nothing in prepackaged or low-calorie or low-fat branded foods. This is the real thing. I studied in Europe. I'm European-trained cook. And it's really using good, basic cooking principles and thinking it through a little bit. I mean, it took a lot of experimenting to get the right proportions of chicken broth versus oil. But, you know, both are real foods. And it will taste great to you. So you'll see examples all the way through the book, and we try to teach people through the recipes that it's just not about using fake stuff. It's about applying just sensible culinary techniques in order to make your food taste better and keep it lower in fat.
Mm. Let's talk about some of the myths of diabetes, which you bust wide open in the book. On page 15, one of these is that the exchange system for meal planning is the only way to go. It turns out there are other ways to do it.
There are many other ways. The exchange system is still a good system. It can be a little confusing for some people. We do suggest that you also sit with a registered dietitian if you wish to do it based on exchanges. In exchange, all that means is that one food is equivalent to another. So, for instance, a slice of bread may be equal to an ounce of crackers. So it gives you lots of different options. However, there are many other things you can do. You can, especially if weight is your issue, you can calorie count. That's still applicable. You know, calories in, calories out will determine your weight loss. You can do it by carbohydrates. People who do have their blood sugar seems to run a little bit high seem to do very well when they count carbohydrates. Carbohydrates, which is one of the three macronutrients, fat and protein are the other two. Carbohydrates are broken down into sugars and starches that include all of your fresh fruits, your vegetables, and all of your starches, your breads and your pastas and your rices. They are the first category that will cause your blood sugar to rise. Now, should you eat carbohydrates? Absolutely. It just needs to be managed. Some people take in way too many, and their blood sugar is more difficult to control. So carbohydrate counting is another way to go. You can go by the pyramid system. Hope is a big believer in the pyramid system, and rightly so, because it's a very easy system to follow. A number of servings from different food groups, and there you go. You've got a nice, well-balanced food program. So there's lots of ways to go, and you have to figure out what's comfortable for you. A lot of people will do it by portion sizes, especially if they are not too careful of what they consider a portion of pasta to be. Some people consider that 7 cups. So, you know, there's many ways to go. And so it all needs to lead to reaching your health goals, keeping your blood sugar nice and stabilized, and if weight is a concern, keeping your weight down.
Yeah. Do the recommended dietary allowances for vitamins and minerals differ for diabetics?
It depends. It just depends upon how old a person is, what sex they are, whether they have any other complications. It would just depend. I'm not quite sure exactly Hope's stance on this, but we recommend that you do start with, you know, your foods first, getting your vitamins and minerals basically from your foods first. And if you do need supplementation, again, sit with your registered dietitian to figure out whether you need a vitamin supplement, if that's apropos. For some people with diabetes, they do need more. Some people, they need the same as everyone else. It just depends upon your situation.
Yeah. Are there vitamins or minerals that are especially helpful for...
Well, it's hard to say this one or that one, because once you say that, you know, vitamin sales come flying off the shelves, and that, as a nutritionist, that would not be my goal. I would want to say that, you know, you need to get a good variety of vitamins and minerals from good food. The drawback of a vitamin supplement, it does not provide fiber, as if we looked at all the vitamins and minerals and fiber in an apple, or all the vitamins and minerals in just a tablet. I think both are appropriate, but I wouldn't choose one over the other. There has not been any conclusive, absolute, for certain vitamins that you have to have in order to keep your diabetes under control. You will see probably in magazines, there are companies who will promote one thing over the other, saying this is the thing that keeps it under control. But keeping diabetes in check involves a good food program, a good physician, a good exercise program. You have to do it all. It's not just a vitamin pill.
Yeah. If someone is diagnosed today, are they likely to get those resources?
If someone's diagnosed today, were they likely to speak with a dietitian?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, some of the many of the hospitals have instituted wonderful programs in recent years. I write for the Diabetes Forecast magazine, which is an award-winning magazine that is published by the American Diabetes Association that is just chock full of research and recipes and just everything you wanted to know about diabetes that you get on a monthly basis. The American Diabetes website is a wonderful place to start. And there are many, many dietitians throughout this country who are very committed, who are very wonderful, and they are available. So if you have been diagnosed with diabetes from your physician, please ask to see a registered dietitian. Even if there might not be one close by, please ask him or her for a recommendation. Even if you have to drive a little bit to go see a registered dietitian, it would be well worth it.
And isn't there a site on the web that has a listing of registered dietitians?
Yeah, there is. I believe that there is a listing of registered dietitians. There is also an association called the Association of Diabetes Educators. They do have a website. Please excuse me, I wasn't prepared to actually give their website, and I don't know what it is, but it's the American Association of Diabetes Educators, AADE. I'm almost certain that they would be able to provide information. You know, the web is just a wonderful source of information.
Mm-hmm.
But I would recommend anyone, please, please, please ask your physician for a consult with a registered dietitian. It's not that the physician can't do it or isn't capable. It's just that usually it takes a lot of time, and unfortunately most physicians just don't have it in their schedules to sit down with you. You need about a good hour, hour and a half, and especially if you're about to go on to insulin, that takes a lot of education, and we strongly suggest that you sit with someone who is certified to do that.
Yeah, very good. Our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine is Robin Webb. She and Hope Warshaw are the authors of the new book, The Diabetes Food and Nutrition Bible, A Complete Guide to Planning, Shopping, Cooking, and Eating. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I welcome your telephone calls this afternoon about diabetes and about nutrition and cooking with the disease. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. When selecting fats for cooking, you like olive oil and canola oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there other things that you'd like to cook with in terms of oils? Or are
personally,
those
are my two favorites.
Yeah.
I think also some of the wonderful nut oils, such as walnut oil, hazelnut oil, which are a little bit harder to come by, especially in this country. They are certainly available. They may be a little pricey, but are very, very worth it. The nut oils, of course, are good sources of monounsaturated fat, which we know helps keep your HDL, your good cholesterol, nice and high. They're wonderful just drizzled over salad or vegetables. So those would be more my other favorites would be the nut oils, a little bit more of the gourmet oils, but certainly just a good basic olive oil or canola for cooking is perfectly acceptable to use.
Yeah, and what are your thoughts about butter and margarine?
Well, put it to you this way. If I was on a desert island and I had butter or margarine to choose from, I probably would choose butter. Now, neither one is terrific for you. Butter, as we know, is all saturated fat, and especially for people who are more prone to heart disease or do have a problem with obesity, you know, really need to watch every fat gram. Margarine, on the other hand, I'm not crazy about it because of its trans fatty acid components. Trans fatty acids have been isolated as they are an artificial kind of fat. They may cause more heart disease than we thought previously. Trans fatty acids are made by a process called hydrogenation. Without getting too technical on you, actually is just, it's almost worse for you than just plain old butter. Even though I know it has wonderful sounding names, Heart Smart and Beet Smart and all that kind of wonderful stuff, I prefer not to use margarine, if at all possible. Now, there are some margarines that are better than others that are mostly of water and not hydrogenated. If you could seek those out, they may have less saturated fat than butter, and in that case, they would probably be okay. Which you want to make sure that there is no partially hydrogenated oils used in the margarine. And if it's a little bit more on the water side, it'll probably be okay. It may not be great for cooking. It'd be more for spreads.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk with a listener on line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hi. I just tuned in, so you may have covered my second question. But with all the fats and stuff, what about peanut oil? Someone gave my husband and me a whole bunch of peanut oil, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to use this. I should use olive oil instead. So I was curious what you thought about that.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And secondly, could you explain the mechanism a little bit by which fats kind of help how they keep the blood sugars high, because I've never really understood that.
Okay. First question, peanut oil. Peanut oil is fine to use. It's actually a nice little nutty oil. Again, just keep your amount quite small. Peanuts, in some research studies, and I'm not going to give you anything totally conclusive, it's a highly pesticide-sprayed plant. So there are some people who don't profess using it. You may read that somewhere, and don't be surprised if you read that. Some people say stay away from peanut oil because of that. A lot of children have peanut allergies, you know, so you'll see that as well. As far as I'm concerned, it's really a fine oil to use, and especially if you do some stir-frying, olive oil would not be an acceptable oil to use because it has a low smoking point, and your fire alarm in your house will probably go off when you're cooking. So if you choose to use oil at high temperatures, a peanut oil wouldn't be a bad idea. And again, just use a small amount, and you'd only need a small amount because it's so aromatic. So I would say it would be fine to use. In terms of your second question, how do fats actually raise your blood sugar? Is that what you were asking?
Yes.
Did I get that right? Okay.
Uh-huh.
They don't, out of the three macronutrients, it's really carbohydrates that raise your blood sugar levels. Fats don't really raise your blood sugar levels. Now, the problem with fats, as most of us know, is that in terms of diabetes, one of the profiles of a person with diabetes is that they may be overweight. So certainly keeping your fats under control will help, along with so many other things, to keep your weight under control. And the more that your weight is under control, then your blood sugar will remain under control. So that's really the reason. Fats themselves don't actually raise your blood sugar level as much as carbohydrates.
I knew that carbohydrates did that. But for some reason, maybe it was a misimpression. I had thought that the fat kind of kept the sugar in the blood longer, and I might just be totally off on that one. But thank you for your answers and for the program.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Robin, did you want to follow up on the?
No, she's delightful. The only other thing I would say is just, you know, fats are not, they won't raise your blood sugar again as much as carbohydrates will. And fat is something you do need in your diet. It does make our food taste good. And it is important to have, you know, nice looking hair and so your skin doesn't dry out, that your nails don't break. You know, it's important to have some fat in your diet. And if you're not a vegetarian, certainly you're going to get some fat in your animal products, any fish, chicken, beef that you may eat. And then I would recommend, you know, a little bit of pure, good olive oil in your diet. If you're someone who is a vegetarian and you're not overdoing it on cheese and nuts, where that also contains a lot of fat, you may have a little bit more of an advantage over a meat eater because it may be easier to keep your fats under control. But don't cut fat out completely. That's another mistake some people do. They hear fat. Oh, fat means I'll be fat. Not necessarily. Mm. So, you know, do keep some fat in your diet. And, again, this is where a registered dietitian comes into play. She or he can really figure out how much fat you should have according to the goals that you need to achieve.
Yeah. One thing that you are high on, avocado and nuts, mm-hmm. And here's my question. I love these things, mm-hmm. But what's the serving size on those things?
I knew you were going to ask me that. They are small. I have to say a serving size is small. Usually an avocado, it's a quarter of an avocado. An ounce of nuts is considered a serving. And how many little nuts you get in an ounce will just depend upon how big the nut is. It's an excellent question because we just started talking about fat, and I was saying keeping your fats under control. They are concentrated sources of fat. However, they are mostly monounsaturated fats. They are two foods that also provide a considerable amount of fiber, other vitamins and minerals that are important, B12, good B complex, vitamin A, especially in the avocado. So they are really worth eating type of fat foods, if you will. You just have to keep it under control. Now, if weight loss is not part of your goal, I wouldn't say go crazy with it, but you probably don't have to be as diligent as someone who's really watching all of their fat grams. But even if you need to lose weight and you do have diabetes, we stick it in the book because we really truly believe that those foods are what we call superfoods. And throughout the book, you'll see we have many examples of what we consider superfoods. We consider fatty fish as superfoods, mango superfoods, berry superfoods. These are foods that we have studied in recent research that provide just so many good things, fiber, all kinds of wonderful vitamins and minerals, that we suggest trying to indulge in these a little bit more. And we've given you recipes for those superstores, so you don't have to eat them alone and they don't have to be bland.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. On line one in Urbana, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I was diagnosed with type 2 back in December, and I met with a registered dietitian, and she did some kind of calculation that said I should be eating 80 grams of carbohydrates per meal across the day. I was just curious, how did she calculate that, and does that sound right?
Yeah, actually, it does sound right. That would be about 240 grams of carbohydrate. The recommended daily allowances for the average person, this is a person that does not have diabetes, is recommended about 300 grams of carbohydrate a day. So that does sound fairly right. She probably calculated it according to your weight, maybe your age. She might have calculated it also due to your activity levels and then just the arrangement of your day. I don't know the kinds of questions that she asked you, but that does sound pretty on key. Probably my question to you is how are your blood sugars running?
Excuse me. Well, that I was on a low dose of glucophage,
okay.
And they were running really low. I mean, I had an HbA1c of 5 the last time, and I just went off the glucophage, and it's doing pretty well since then, but I don't have an HbA1c since then.
Okay.
But, I'm 6'2" and 275 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and I do find 240 grams of carbohydrates during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Does leave me sometimes a little lethargic.
Hungry. Yeah, a little hungry. Yeah, and it's always good to go back to the person as long as you feel comfortable with her, correct?
Yes.
Okay. If you feel comfortable with her, you can always go back and do a little fine-tuning up. She does sound like she did the right thing. It sounds like your blood sugars are under control. And that's the main test, and also looking, of course, at your A1C when you get that done, just making sure that is good. What was it last time? Do you remember?
It was a 5,
5.0. Oh, well, that's fabulous. 5 is wonderful.
Well,
They took me off
of the glucophage because it was so low.
Yeah. 5, I mean, that's like not having diabetes at all. But certainly the next one will tell the tale as well. Sounds like you're doing real well. I would talk to her and just say, I'm a little hungry and maybe we can work something out. And then, if she's good at what she does and she sounds like she is, she'd be able to kind of manipulate it a little bit. And that's the thing, working with an individual, the thing about being in the business for so long, it distresses me when books come out and give a blanketed program for everyone because everyone is so different and has different needs and different weights and they have a different height and they have a different sex and everybody needs something different.
Can
Let
I ask
us go to tailor it a little bit more for you.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
I've been told and read that I should be eating things that are high in fiber and complex because they take longer to break down and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're very good about that, which I tend to be, can you have more carbohydrates if they're of the complex kind rather than the simple kind?
Well, it would behoove you to have more of the complex, of course, for the fiber content. And again, I think the most important thing here is to see how your blood sugar reacts. I have patients myself who, love brown rice, and sometimes they get a little carried away with it, and the blood sugar, just gets a little out of whack, and their A1C may, not be as good. I would absolutely stress to have the complex ones much more than, simple carbohydrates. Again, you'll have to see how you handle them. Again, everyone is different, but yes, they do have much more fiber in them. They're much better for you. The amount of how much you can increase, again, will depend upon your goals, where you are, how your blood sugar is running. So you just have to be careful, but absolutely I would have much more of the complex.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for the call. Next we go to a listener in the Chicago area on a cell phone on line 2. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm wondering if you could comment a little bit about what the last question the last caller had about the glycemic index of foods and what's better between simple and complex carbohydrates. And I know which one is better, but I'm more interested in exactly how they work and why that's true.
Sure. there's a lot of controversy about the glycemic index, whether or not it really is a useful tool in managing diabetes. On the one hand, it does give us a good clue of how foods go into your system and the amount of time that it would raise your blood sugar level. Even things like, I'll just give it something off the top of my head, rice cakes, believe it or not, innocent food. People love them, low in fat, raises your blood sugar quite high. The speed of which it raises your blood sugar is higher than, let's say, brown rice, okay? However, where it's been criticized is its use is it's just looking at single food. We don't eat single food. We eat food as part of a meal. So does it mean that you should never have rice cakes? Probably not. It means it may need to be combined with other foods. It may mean that we have to see how you personally react to it. So looking at tables, and I don't know if you've ever looked at an actual glycemic index table, they're fine to look at, and I think they give you an overall sense of how fast food gets into your blood sugar, into your bloodstream, and how fast your blood sugar will actually rise in reaction to them. But I wouldn't depend upon them and say I can't have something because it looks like it gets into my bloodstream too quick. Carrots is a great example of that. You will see carrots being eliminated on a lot of programs for people with diabetes, really with not a lot of scientific evidence to back that up, because carrots are a sugary vegetable and they get into your bloodstream perhaps quicker than celery, you know. But if you really look at carrots, they're probably going to be within a meal. They are a wonderful source of vitamin A. They contain fiber and whatnot. So it's kind of a it's not a bad thing to look at, but I wouldn't depend upon it solely. Again, its criticism is that they're just looking at single individual food. Does that help you?
Yep. Answer your question. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll free 800-222-9455. I want to go back to that caller who called and asked about peanut oil, mm-hmm. and you talked about stir fries. I'm wondering, you don't need a lot of oil to do a stir fry.
No, you don't.
And I'm wondering, can you do that same kind of technique with the chicken broth?
Yes, you can. You need to make sure that you add enough so it doesn't all evaporate. But absolutely, you can. Does it give great flavor? To be very honest with you, as my cook side of me comes out here, it doesn't give the better flavor than the oil. The oil will actually give it a little nuttier flavor.
Uh-huh.
But certainly, if you or someone says, you know, I had a little bit too much fat, or I'm just about to hit my fat brink, and I want to make a stir fry tonight, maybe it's better for you to use chicken broth, you know, and you just make sure you have a really good recipe and you have good quality spices and, you know, you make it taste great. So, yes, you can go non-fat with stir fries. I know in my experience as a cook, it doesn't give as best flavor as it possibly can by using, you know, the nut oils to me are better. But certainly your recipe will work.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as long as you bolster that up with some good tasting foods, spices, herbs, you
yeah.
should be okay.
Maybe some ginger or some
yeah, exactly.
pepper flakes or something
exactly.
like that. Yeah. Let's go back to the superstar idea.
Okay.
There's lots of superstars in the book. And one of these is quinoa. You're really high on quinoa. There's all kinds of recipes
mm-hmm.
in the book for quinoa.
Mm-hmm.
What's so good about quinoa? What is it?
Quinoa is a grain. It's a grain that's been around for probably 4,000 years. We're first discovering it right now. and what it is, it's a wonderful little grain. It cooks up in 15 minutes. That's one of the reasons why we like it so much. It's very high in protein, and it's high in fiber. It looks like couscous almost. Actually, couscous takes 5 minutes. Quinoa takes about 15. Quinoa, which is spelled Q-U-I-N-O-A, a lot of people call it quinoa, but it's called quinoa, is available in most natural food stores. I haven't seen it in too many major grocery stores. It is also made into bread, and you will see it sometimes in cereals as well. And it has just a beautifully nutty flavor, and again, it's a high-protein, high-fiber grain.
Okay, so I guess we should
look for
yummy.
That. It's yummy. It's really great.
Yeah.
It's a great grain.
What other superstars are out there that you'd think we should investigate?
Well, the other superstars that we have in our book, and unfortunately we're just coming out of its season right now, but is berries, all berries, especially things like blueberries. Blueberries are just filled with antioxidants. Raspberries, of the berries, are filled with fiber. Great sources of vitamin C. We love all the berries, strawberries, blackberries, blueberries, raspberries, all of them. Right now, depending upon where you live in the country, you may not get the best, but whenever you can stock up on berries, we just love them, and they're just so good for you, and they taste great, too. Another superstar that we're big on, we love mangoes. Mangoes are an excellent source of vitamin A, excellent source of vitamin C. They're creamy tasting. They taste like you're indulging. In the wintertime, you'll feel like you're in Hawaii. so it's a wonder. We love mangoes. I think we have probably about 20 different superstars in there. Other things include, we have garlic in there. Like I said, fatty fishes are in there. Our dark leafy greens, such as spinach, arugula, the nuts, we had mentioned that one before. Mm-hmm. Avocados, of course, are in there. Citrus fruits, of course, are in there. Tomatoes. Tomatoes are a wonderful source of a compound called lycopene, which has been shown to mm-hmm. perhaps help men prevent prostate cancer. So there's just a wonderful foods that just have been around forever, and people, and they're pretty much familiar foods.
Yeah.
That we give you a little help on how to prepare them.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener, this one in Chicago on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I was wondering if your guest would comment on what she feels about Barry Sears' soy zone diet that he recommends for everyone in general, but it could help diabetics in the sense that it maintains the insulin level. Have you any views on it at all?
I'm sorry, on soy? Is that what you asked?
Yes. I asked about the soy zone. Have you heard about the Barry Sears?
Oh, Barry Sears, the zone. I'm sorry. I thought you
but
said
particularly
soy.
The soy zone. He has a new...
Oh, the soy zone that he has. Okay. I'm a big fan of soy. Actually, soy is in the book. And yes, we in some research studies it's shown to keep the blood sugars under control. More, I think, our soy is in our book for its benefits, especially for women, because of its mimic of estrogen, particularly during times, the menopausal times. Soy has also been approved by the FDA to be used, and it may help prevent heart disease, which is another wonderful part. I must be very honest with you. I have not read the Soy Zone. I do have Barry Sears' other books.
In the Vegetarian Times and a couple of other books,
yes.
They reviewed his book, and yes. They do recommend his observations on general as maintaining the insulin level.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, soy is a wonderful food, and, thank you for pointing out to my attention. I will add that book now to my library. I do have his other books, and I certainly will review that. But absolutely, soy. I mean, there's controversies all the time coming out. Yes, soy, no soy. For the most part, there are many, many benefits to soy. And again, I hate to keep sounding like a broken record, but, you go back to a registered dietitian, you speak with them and say, what do you think about soy milk? What do you think about tofu? What do you think about these soy products? How can I fit them in? How can I make them taste good? And I think soy is a wonderful non-animal source of great quality protein. And to me, it tastes great. I actually personally drink 3 glasses of soy milk a day. And like that very much. So,
okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And let's squeeze one more caller in here on line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
I'm intrigued by this pesto recipe with chicken broth. Are you willing to share the quantities on that?
Go ahead. You can read it for her. That's no problem.
Yeah, let me see if it's page 52 here. Mm-hmm. Pesto sauce, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1/4 cup Parmesan cheese, 1 cup fresh chopped basil, 1/4 cup fat-free reduced sodium chicken broth, 3 cloves garlic minced, and 1 tablespoon toasted pine nuts, and you toast those in a skillet without any oil.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks
okay.
very much. You're very welcome.
Serves 4. Serving size is 2 tablespoons. Calories, 105. Calories from fat, 86.
Yeah. It still has fat.
Yep.
It still has fat in it. It's considerably less than what you would see in the typical
pesto recipe. Yeah, very good. And I suppose, too, if, we're in the kitchen, we can monkey with this to our own taste.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. We give you guidelines. I mean, I will tell you, my recipes are so flexible. If you say, Robin, I really hate time. I'm taking it out. Be my guest. It'll probably work just fine. So,
okay. I want to thank you very much for talking with
us. You're so very welcome.
Robin Webb. Robin Webb has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. She and Hope Warshaw are the authors of the Diabetes Food and Nutrition Bible, a complete guide to planning, shopping, cooking, and eating. It's published by the American Diabetes Association.